Yippee! Yippee! Yippee!
Listen, what's the title of this thing? No title again?
I'm Daddy Lonely, the Ledu Mare.
Is it rolling, Bob?
I go to the room, and there's There is a coffee machine, one of those, you know, Keurigs, I think they're called. You know, the ones you put the little thing in. And so I'm like, okay, well, that's cool. So I look around for the coffees, no coffee. So I search all the drawers, I search all over the place, no coffees. I'm like, what the hell, man? So I call room service, or I call, you know, the front desk, and I say, you know, I'm not somebody that calls and causes a fuss, but there's no coffee. So I call and I say, hey, I'm sorry to bother you. Maybe I missed it, but there's no coffee in my room. Would you mind sending some out kind of thing? He's like, no, the coffee's in the bar. So you know what that means. If it's in the bar, you know, it's going to cost something.
That'd piss me off too, Dave.
So I go and I look. $8.
Oh, I'm with you on that one, Dave. That is Dave of walking and talking and smiling with Dave. Gonna get back to him. I have just loaded up my iPod, and got quite a few to go through. That's a Viva Las Vegas. So there seems to be a string of them just came out from Dave. Anyway, here it is. Welcome to a new, fresh, not even done, Dixon Jane's podcast number, 437, perhaps? Somewhere in there. Bluffers Park, the parking lot. They've blocked off the cat parking lot. And so we're in the boat launch area, and it is sheet ice. Like, as far as you can see, there's no salt, there's no attempt at plowing. It's just a skating rink. And it's amazing because you drive your car in here and it doesn't go in the direction your steering wheel goes, necessarily. And you ought to give lot. Yeah, sorry about that. I could see the battery warning light was on. I thought, I'll just run them into the ground and there you go. I was saying, when you're steering, the car doesn't always go in the same direction you're pointing. It slides, and you've got to be very careful putting on the brakes, I'll tell you. But it's kind of cool. And there are people in front of me now feeding the geese. The geese are huge. Not the geese, the swans. They're huge suckers. And they're out on the pavement, and there's an SUV parked, and they must have a ton of food, but they're feeding them by hand, one by one. And, of course, surrounded with all the other pigeons, hoping to pick up the crumbs and the ducks and the geese as well. Such is life here in Buffers Park. At home with my bird feeder, damn it, those squirrels, we have three different kinds, have managed to eat away. There's a lovely little plastic pedestal for the birds to sit on, and then an oval opening for them just to get their beaks in. Well, squirrels didn't want any of that, and they just tore those things off. So there's big gaping holes now in the plastic, so the squirrels can get their big mouth in. But there's a part of me that's been kind of glad to feed them. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to change it. I'm going to put the bird feeder, if I can repair it, a little further up the branch so that the squirrels cannot get at it. But I had to. I was just in awe of how they figured this thing out and how they just twisted their body to get at the stuff. And when they're upside down and you see this big furry belly, they're cute. They're nice. And I felt happy feeding them and the big mice below or whatever they happen to be. And although it has taken the pleasure out a little bit for my wife. Once she found out they were mice, she thought, it's just not the same looking at it. And I'm saying, come on now. Especially after hearing the last Shane and Tom, I feel somebody's got to be kind to mice. Anyway, that's another story. I'm not going to go there. A few themes to pick up on. One of which is, well, of course, it's the beads. But a bigger story is I wanted to revisit my roots, which, you know, why I'm doing this podcast. Sort of the subheading was, how did I ever end up in this middle-class suburban lifestyle? The one I thought I had been rejecting for a good part of my life. And here I am, celebrating, happy to be here. And I guess that's not so strange, but there were quite a few steps along the way. And I feel I have a lot of people to thank that what led my life to this point. You sometimes, you know, I think our egos want to say, oh, I did it. But you know, it's impossible without all these, the help from certain people, the guidance, the influence. And these are people you meet in real life, and perhaps even people you meet through books. Even podcasters, you know, people you listen to. And then social movements, the bigger picture. And the difference between my brother and sister, who have lived much more conventional lives. Have they? I wonder. Maybe I just like to think that I'm very different from them, but we all end up sort of in the same place in a way. And that is another a failing of mine, to think I'm not necessarily better, but special, right? We all want to think we're special. But in my case, it was just that the difference of 5 years was that I was born into this other era when everything was permitted, when suddenly the doors were flung wide open and you could be anything, do anything. That was the mantra of the day. You know, that was the leery message. That was what the rock music was telling us. The times are saying, hit the road, Jack, you know, travel, experience life. Never mind going out and getting a job and a career. It's the last fucking thing you want to do. And clearly, if I had been born earlier, you know, just assuming I had the same DNA and makeup and everything else, I would have led a very, very different life. So I'm very grateful for being born in 1948 and sort of coming of age, you know, during the hippie era. You know, I was... You're watching that first performance of the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show and thinking, wow, those guys are cool. They just look neat. There's something happening here. It's big. And then following them on their journey. I guess that's honestly one of the bigger influences on my life was the Beatles. Sounds silly, but it wasn't just the music. It was, hey, these guys are changing before our very eyes. They're getting high. They're getting turned on by Bob Dylan. Holy shit, their dentist is giving them LSD. Man, oh man. Look at them now. If you thought they were wild back in 1964, they were pretty tame back then. But anyway, that's kind of what I want to talk about, which is what I've been talking about forever and ever and ever and ever and ever, all men, on this show. I have my iPad on my lap. I decided... Oh, I'll do this kind of backwards, but here it is. This thing says, three things writers can learn from the Beat Generation, okay? And I'm not going to read it all out. It's very, very simple. There's that wonderful photo of a big part of the Beat Generation outside of Ferlinghetti's City Lights bookshop in San Francisco, which, of course, I visited. And it's just great. There's Ginsberg right in the middle, and you can see, you know, all these people. This person who's saying what we can learn, writers can learn from the Beat Generation. Number one, naked self-expression is the seed of creativity. Okay. Now I'm talking to you potential artists out there and maybe those of you who just want to know why am I so hung up on these guys. Although I was humbled today. I realize I am not the Beat expert I might have wanted to think I was. Naked self-expression is the seed of creativity. And then they go on to just quote a passage from Kerouac when he's talking about how I want to follow, you know, those who are mad to live, mad to talk, mad to be saved. Any Beat fan will know that quote from On the Road. Just his new style of writing, right? This they thought in a rapid, manic stream of consciousness. They valued fresh perspectives and felt the careful structuring of earlier writing was an aberration of the truth. So you got to write in a whole new style to really get at the truth of what's happening. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, the artist consciousness is expanded by derangement of the senses. And derangement of the senses, of course, right away you think by drugs. Well, of course, the writer here says, well, I don't advocate taking drugs. But many of these beats did, partake, of a wide variety of drugs to shift their consciousness, right? The artist's consciousness is expanded by derangement of the senses. This gentleman who wrote the article says there are other ways to do it, and that is just new ways are travel, relationships with people who are different from me, and even isolation. That's another way to derange your senses. Okay, and number three, art eludes conventional morality. And then, of course, that refers back to when Howl was banned and nobody wanted to print or publish Kerouac's On the Road, and the vulgarity that's out there that, you know, now, of course, pretty well anything goes. But there was a real pushback in the 50s about the need for people to say, hey, whoa, you can't apply your gray business suit standards and suburban mentality to my art and my self-expression. Okay, all right, that's it. I just needed to share that with you, get that out of the way. I am so excited because I got something in the mail yesterday via Amazon.com, and I've posted it on my Facebook already, yes, indeed, called The Beats, A Graphic History. I don't know why. I'd never seen this before, and I think I more or less found it by chance. I'd certainly never seen it in a bookstore, and I am thrilled. It is like an adult comic. My wife said, oh, that's manga, Japanese manga style, telling a story. And it's fabulous. I've only read the first story, which is Kerouac's life. And the drawings are great. You follow along the story, and they do an amazing job of encapsulating the whole life of Kerouac. I'm looking. Oh, it's wonderful. Honestly, this is like almost the prize to my beat collection. I am so happy I got this, and I was amazed I got it. Reasonable price, and I'm delivered in a matter of days. The Beats, A Graphic History. And so the first story is Kerouac. After that, they do Ginsberg. After that, they do Burroughs. So they do the three main characters. But what I'm really tickled about, and then there's all these other characters who just get like two-page stories. Philip Whalen, Michael McClure, who else we got here? Kenneth Rexroth, he gets much more. It's the whole section is the San Francisco Poetry Renaissance, which really started before Ginsberg's famous reading of Howl in 1955. So that is fabulous. And this is where I got humbled, because there was so much in here about the other figures who I sort of tend to ignore because I focus on just the big names, you know, but all the other in particular. Here are Kenneth Patchen, Philip Lamantia, and it's great. And some of these are done by different artists, different styles. This has just made me so damn happy. So if you thought I was done with the beats, fuck you. I never will be. And I'm just tickled pink about that. I'm still very much enjoying the Ken Kesey book. At first, I didn't like it because it's not a biography of Kesey. Well, it is. Acid Christ, it's called. The writer, Mark Christensen, keeps inserting himself in the book. And at first, it pissed me off. I said, hey, I just want to read about Kesey. I don't care about you. But I'm finding, actually, he's done a pretty good job of putting himself in as a young person from a pretty wealthy family, sort of almost like myself in the terms of not being a full-fledged hippie, sort of being on the sidelines. You're being able to be, you can pick and choose at it. He, of course, led a much more interesting life. He got to spend an awful lot of time in Hawaii, I'm guessing on his father's dollar, surfing. And, but every once in a while, there's a chapter that's just him and his friends, and then bam, it reconnects with what was Kesey doing at that time. More like what was he doing while Kesey was doing this, and the other people. It's very good. better than I at first thought. And again, it's a cultural history, and that's what's so interesting. So, God, I know some of you are just groaning now, but don't you feel passion for anything? Don't you want to know where you came from? Like, what influenced the world you live in? And I guess for all my real friends out there who I've met through podcasting and the listeners of this show, very few are my age or anywhere near approaching my age. And you've got a completely different set of heroes. And I think that's really all I'm doing is sort of celebrating the heroes. And, of course, it's always been, as I mentioned earlier, the Beatles. Well, gee, who influenced them? Well, Dylan. Well, who influenced Dylan? Well, it was the Beatles. So you keep going back to find out who are the people who helped at least wave flags to caution us about not accepting fully. I bitched today. I posted on Facebook that, holy fuck, Facebook, as soon as I log on my iMac, it's sort of saying, well, you got to complete your personal history. And, well, when did you graduate? What did you major in? What did you study? And all these fucking goddamn invasive questions are coming there. What, you know, where were you living then? Well, you know, Jesus Christ, fuck off! Fuck off! It's not your goddamn business. I'll post what I want to post. Thank you. I like this vehicle. I like Facebook. Great for putting up pictures of beer cans in the snow. I love it when people like something or post a comment. But fuck, don't order me around, you fucking asshole. Isn't that the one thing that pisses me off? Somebody telling me what to do? It isn't that. Very much an influence from these people. Hey, push back. Fuck you. Don't tell me what to do. Anyway, oh, God. It's, what, Thursday, my day off? No, is it Wednesday? Yeah, it's Wednesday. My son's at college. Hooray! And I'm here, deserted now, in this whole ice rink of Bluffers Park. And I'm going to go see the 2 o'clock showing of Her today. Because I've heard good things about it. And I love movies, and it's a day off, and why not? And what other reason do I have? It's just fun to go to a movie. I really enjoyed The Wolf of Wall Street, and I've got to go see, of course, as soon as I try to remember the name, American Hustler, yes, and probably a few others that are on the Academy Awards list. So I don't think I got anywhere near to what I hope to get on to, but I did start a podcast, and that's a good start. So let's go back to Dave, just finishing things off. Whoops.
How about that? $8. So, needless to say, I'm grouchy now because I haven't had a...
And he had to pay $20 to get into his room early. That would piss me off too, Dave. But I admire you, man. I got respect for you, Dave. I really do. Launching out on your own, doing your own thing. Showing up in Las Vegas on your own dime.
I'm going to go get some food. So I'll probably follow up again soon. Talk to you later.
The flower said, I wish I was a tree. The tree said, I wish I could be a different kind. Cat wished that it was a bee. The turtle wished that it could fly really high into the sky, over rooftops, and then dive deep into the sea. And in the sea there is a fish that has a secret wish, a wish to be a big cactus with a pink flower on it. And in the sea there is a fish that has a secret wish, a wish to be a big cactus with a pink flower on it. And the flower would be its offering of love to the desert. And the desert so dry and lonely that the critters all appreciate the effort. Et le jackalope buddy, je voudrais être un yeti pour voler dans la nuit. Oh, man. rattlesnake said, I wish I had hands so I could hug you like a man. And then the cactus said, but don't you understand? My skin is covered with sharp spikes that'll stab you like a thousand knives. A hug would be nice, but hug my flower with your eyes. The flower said, I wish I was a tree. The tree said, I wish I could be a different kind of tree. The cat wished that it was a bee. The turtle wished that it could fly really high into the sky, over rooftops and then dive deep into the sea. And in the sea there is a fish that has a secret wish, a wish to be a big cactus with a pink flower on it. And in the sea there is a fish that has a secret wish, a wish to be a big cactus with a pink flower on it. And the flower would be its offering of love to the desert, and the desert so dry and lonely that the creatures all appreciate the effort.
Thanks for the song, Dave. It's the tail end of a Walking with Dave. I'm gonna fade it out if you don't mind, because I'm driving and I gotta pay attention. Don't have earbuds in. Actually, it's a nice song. Oh, got a right turn coming up. Pay attention here. Thank you. Oops. Yeah, I got lots of things to say, and that's why I started recording, because I didn't want to forget them. Number one, I'm thinking, first time I think I've thought this way, that our podcasts are very much like a community radio. I got that because I read a passage in the Beats where they were talking about community radio back in the late 40s and realized, gee, that's, in a way, that's what we're doing here. And what's neat about ours is we choose our own radio stations. Like, you make your radio station, whatever podcast you subscribe to, and you tune in whenever you want. You've just got that much more control over radio. But the big part of that story for me is, I feel much better being a part of a radio station than being a podcast on my own. Like, suddenly there's a weight off my shoulders. Okay, Dixon James is just one part of the many podcasts you might listen to. The different voices out there. And you just sort of tune in, you know, some as we subscribe when it comes out, and others on your own time, before and after this podcast, that podcast. It's wonderful having, as the listener, having all this control. And as a podcaster, feeling of belonging to a collective, you know, a group. And the way we share with this, it's very cool. And of course, there's always a connection to my father's Morse code, you know. And I've got all these parallels going on. Not as Morse code, as ham radio. The Morse code was like the technology of our recording gear and so on. But the ham radio, reaching out at night in the darkness across the airwaves and tuning in somebody you've maybe never heard before, or finding their frequency and calling them repeatedly, you know, and chatting with an old friend you've made in the distance at night. Wow. And I think again and again and again about the friendships I've made through podcasting, through being a part of it, and through listening to others. It blows me away, man, and that's why this parallel to me to the Beats. I think podcasting is a real movement, and it's a wonderful one because it is our individual voices, and that's important. Number the other thing I wanted to say was another parallel When I first came back to Canada with my wife in 1987, after that trip around the world, we settled in Ottawa, and I got a job teaching at the High School of Commerce, the Ottawa Board of Education, doing ESL. And at one point, my wife ended up as one of my students. And that was it. Boy, and see, I don't even know if I've ever mentioned that. I probably have on this podcast sometime way in the distant past. She was a little more critical of me than the other students. But it was an interesting experience. And we got to know some of the people. We had 1 year. We had two wonderful people from Lebanon who I think met in my class and actually married. And I wish I had kept in touch. At one point, we did go back and visit them. And I've sort of lost touch of my early days of teaching in Ottawa. I guess 87. I was doing adult literacy. I was doing business preparation. I was doing stuff that I like. Anyway, at one point, and now here we are, so many years later, you know, 2014, and I'm teaching at a community college here, and my son is a student at the same community college. It just happens he's in a different campus, fortunately, for both of us. But that just seems kind of neat, that other thing. And the third thing on my list, boy, I'm just, you know, by the time I get to the park, I'm on my way to Thompson Park along Eglinton here, because I'm actually feeling a little bit high. I decided to have just a little puff from my my vaporizer before the movie. I went to see her, and thought, you know, it's going to be one of those ethereal type things, and hey, it's about a guy falling in love with an operating system, so, you know, not necessarily a bad movie to get a little high to. And so I did, or thought I did, and then I went in, got my ticket, then went back to the car. I thought, I'll just have one more little draw. You're just getting a draw. The thing was a bit blocked, so I didn't think I was getting anything, and I had a little bit of a cookie in my tool bag there, a little bit of a very nice cookie. And so I had a little bite of that, too. And of course, they don't kick in until much later. And here I am getting out of the movie higher than when I went in. So I thought I'd drive to Thompson Park rather than go straight home. And get away from the movie theater and the traffic. That was Warden and Eglinton, in case I got any higher. God, what a thing to say. I got lots of news. I'm sitting on it. I'm not going to share it with you now. I'm going to try not to anyway. And anyway, so go in, see this movie. When I bought the ticket, it said something about strollers, babes in strollers or something. Oh, that's odd. What the heck is that? Is that a special kind of a theater? And I walk in, and right away there's a big changing board in the front of the, seats in an aisleway. And there's a lady there with her baby, and either she's just put on a fresh diaper or whatever. And then I look up and I say, gee, strollers in the aisleways, of course. And then another baby, two babies, mothers, you know, and another baby, they're chatting away. And I think, okay, I guess that's what this stroller thing was about, you know. There's a, I found out, of course, much later, it is a thing on Thursdays at this theater. They open one of the theaters and show certain movies, and I'm very much in admiration of this concept, for mothers to come in with their babies and catch a movie just on Thursdays in the afternoon. And I think, what a great idea. Whoever thought of that should get some credit for it, because it's a good thing. But, of course, if I had known what this thing was beforehand, I would not have gone to that performance. Because invariably the babies are going to cry and the mothers are going to get up and walk around and you're just going to be distracted. Now, this movie, Her, was all about dialogue, the entire movie. So you couldn't have had a worse movie, really, to see with, you know, five babies in the audience and their mothers. And you knew, holy shit, you what kind of an asshole would stand up and ask them to quiet down? Hey, asshole. You'd be beaten up. Really, there'd be security guards. You'd be beaten up, hauled off to jail if you even called the mothers on their noisy babies. Hey, fuckhead. That's the whole point of this thing. But I'm sitting there thinking, okay, look, damn it, I just missed another really important part. But the whole time I'm enjoying it, and for most of the time, the babies almost fit the background of the movie. It really was. They were crying, and I could hear them, but I could sort of get back to the dialogue and just think of it as another sound effect. Which they were, you know, quite, they were there, boy, in stereo. But anyway, I wasn't upset. I just said, no, I'm not angry. I mean, you know, who's to blame? It's me. I went to a movie that was about strollers. But all the while, you know, I think it was funny when I missed one more piece of dialogue towards the end, which I knew was important, and I just couldn't quite hear it. I thought, okay, I'm not walking out of here without compensation, you know. And I knew my approach. My approach was, hey, nobody did anything wrong but me. I didn't know what strollers was. But I'll be a lot happier if I got a free ticket. And I did. I walked out of the theater with a free ticket. I handled it well. I put all my training into use. Went straight up to the ticket taker. Said, where's the manager? Oh, she's just over there. Walked up to her. Now, we didn't get off to a good start because I said, I'm just turning into Thompson Park. No, I didn't say that. Everybody else has got their uniforms on for the theater, and she doesn't. And, of course, I made a joke about that. I said, I'm telling you, you're the manager. You're the one without the uniform. And she didn't even crack a smile. So, said, now I know I've just come into this movie, and explained the whole situation to her, but did it in such a way that I realize it's my fault. And right away, her back is up, like, hey, every Thursday we have a movie for moms and strollers. That's what this is. You should have, almost sort of like a you should have known. And I said, look, I booked online. It's the first time. And I knew I was within my rights. I knew she'd be making a very big mistake if she did not give me one free pass. But she felt she had to, you know, okay, see if she could talk me out of it. Well, she couldn't. So she went off, presumably to see another manager or get permission somewhere, or just decided she had to take a walk because she couldn't tell me right away. So I quite happily sat down on a bench and got out my Beats book. Oh, I'm just going to wait. And sure enough, she came back. I waved over here. She walked past me to the ticket counter and came back with a Cineplex courtesy ticket, one admission. Thank you very much. I don't feel sneaky about that at all. I handle it well. Like I would, if I start trying to do this on a regular basis, different theaters all around town, deliberately go to movies that have crying babies, you know, Stroller Thursdays or whatever, then I'm a creep. But the one time I was perfectly within my rights to get this back, and I would have been very annoyed with myself if I'd gone home and just grumbled about it and didn't do anything, right? Okay, so that's something to say about life. I thought it was an excellent movie. The dialogue was superb. The acting was great. I was not disappointed. And I just keep comparing it to that piece of shit, Gravity. You know, with all its, it was the stupidest movie. And I know, you know, whoa, big chance for Academy Awards. That wasn't even acting that she had to do. This one, the guy had to act. His feelings of love and loneliness and this is Joachimon, I don't know, Phoenix, who I loved when he played Cash, the Johnny Cash movie, Walk the Line or whatever it was called. He's fabulous. Now, that's acting. But anyway, highly recommended. I've got to go and see some others. Well, you know, I'll probably give this ticket to my son, encourage him to go and see a movie. But anyway, I thought I'd just share that with you, and I guess I should get back to a different topic. Let's stop there, okay? Let's just stop there and then come back to Dave's, the end of that song. Oh my God, no. All right. Thank you, Dave.
Not bad. Not bad.
Not bad.
Hey. You're walking with Dave. It's nearly 1 a.m. and I'm in Toronto.
It's been good hanging out with you, Dave.
And I know I might have a couple listeners from Nashville. I know I have a few. Jason, I think you're one of them.
Yeah, Jason. Up in this brain. I love the interconnectedness. I was thinking about that earlier.
Hear some good live music here at the subway. So I'm waiting at Bloor Station right now for the subway. I've just got in tonight.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
After a very long drive to Toronto. Normally it's about 12 hours. I think it took us... actually,
so we've jumped from the old podcast into the... Now I'm going to listen to this on my own, all right? Hours. Thanks, Dave. I'm going to listen to him in private.
I brought my family with me.
Yep.
I originally had planned to come on my own. I decided to bring the family. Which I'm really glad I did.
When you're falling awake and you take stock of the new day, and you hear your voice croak as you choke on what you need to say, well, don't you fret, don't you fear, I will give you good cheer. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. If you wait, then you play, and I will fail. As the verses unfold and your soul suffers the long day, and the 12 o'clock gloom spins the room, you struggle on your way. Well, don't you sigh, don't you cry, lick the dust from your eye. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. We will meet in the sweet light of dawn, as the Baker Street train spills your pain all over your new dress, and the symphony sounds underground, but you wanted you a rest. Well, don't you squeal as the wheel grinds you under the wheels. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Life's a long song, but the tune ends too soon for us all.
I got a big smile on my face, and I'm not sure I can share with you why I do, but I'm still in the park. It's cold. I just don't want to go home just yet. Sometimes I need it. It's not solitude. I don't know. It's not escape either, but it's just being in control of my own space. I got so many thoughts going through my head now. Can't believe that damn cookie. Anyway, I've thought a lot about work, about teaching. Like, I'm in a, there's a position I'm in right now. You know, this business of me asking for the free ticket because my viewing experience was spoiled through my own ignorance. There's times when you act and push and demand and take, you know, and manipulate and, you know, just do things to get through life. You have to. And often we don't want it. We want just things to sort of come to us easily. No fuss and bother. But to live life, you have to be pretty active. And I'm in a situation now where my students, I've got a, this, I'm teaching this, what I would call a very special class at the college. A special mix of students, and I'm just so glad I've got it. Like, I'm in a peak position in this particular college. It's a really nice situation. And you've heard me. I mean, to have that burden lifted off my shoulders, like, sometimes I feel like I'm just the, one of these naturally lucky persons, or that I have this kind of guardian angel who just, you know, takes away any weight. But which isn't to say there hasn't been suffering. And I have a big decision coming up, to make another big decision that I had talked about previously on the show. Oh, fuck, am I going to talk about it? I really don't want to talk about it. I'd rather do it later. So we'll do that later. I have another situation that's come up. And my students don't have their book yet. It's an expensive book. It's in the on their curriculum. It costs about $80, you know. And I could teach that an entire course, 15 course, without this book at all. I just don't need it. And I just thought, you know, this would be the time to go in and tell them, look, there's only one class of this sort. I'm your teacher. Let's just set aside the curriculum for now and just let me teach it my way. And the college would never have the guts to do that, right? They'd need some authority. There's a bureaucracy. No, there's a contract. No, there's a learning outcomes. Well, show us your learning outcomes. Fuck you. These kids need help, you know? And I'm seeing this in a way that I'm pretty sure I'm totally in the wrong. And it's just my ego shouting out, I can do it, you know? I don't need that shit. I can certainly entertain and hold their interest, and I think that's a big part of the battle. I had them do an assignment. Maybe I mentioned this earlier, and pardon me for repeating myself, but just, okay, you can get in touch with your 13-year-old self. What advice are you going to give? You've got to give 3 pieces of advice to the 13-year-old self. So I structured it the way they have to write letters. First of all, secondly, finally, and they fill in the blanks. And I read 3 of them. And I was just blown away. They all said study harder and so on, but just, they were really heartfelt, and that's what I'd asked them to do. I don't know what the rest will be like, but these ones were like, they really were thinking back to when they were 13. Well, that's not on the fucking curriculum. That's not required. No, you know, you got all this other shit stuff that's not necessarily going to help them. And I could design a course around helping people express themselves, you know? Why not give me that thing? Why not I go to the dean and say, look, a trade-off, a deal. Yeah, and you see, I won't do that. Tomorrow I'll think completely differently. No, no, it's just easier to just go on my own way the way it is. I don't want to jump through hoops. I don't want to have to prove anything. But there's a part of me saying, fuck, man. You know, I think I'm giving in to some degree of this growing older. I think there's a part of me that's starting to cave. And I know that's not a good thing. And sometimes I think, well, maybe I talk about it too much on this podcast. But no, that is part of who I am now. I'm this person, going to be 66 this April. And, of course, that used to sound really old, and it still does. But it's that not stopping. Like, I mean, I watched this movie and I was excited. The dialogue was excellent. And I thought, I can't remember things from one day to the next. My memory, it's as if lots of my brain has just got up and walked away. But I can appreciate things. I can get, like, this Beats book I've got in front of me here. Wonderful drawing, a cartoon drawing of Allen Ginsberg. That's the next chapter I'll read. It's a work of art. And this business of having this community radio, and I don't know. Sometimes all the pieces join together. They're all of a one. And you just, we can't always see that. We get locked up on our details and caught up. There were so many messages in the movie today about human relationships and love and who we are as modern man almost. And I was really, really impressed with the script for Her. And I highly recommend it. Now, I'm stirring up a little shit on Facebook, so maybe I'll just check into that and get back to you a little later. Not even sure what it was I just shared with you, other than to be bold and don't go up. Look at that Dylan Thomas poem to his father. Do not go gentle unto the night, or something like that, you know. Rave against the dying. And hey, that's not me. I'm not dying. I'm not getting old. Old like that old. I did, in fact, ties in nicely. I don't know if I mentioned it to you or not, because I can't remember, as I just told you. I remember that part. I want to reach 1,000 episodes. It came up in a joke, maybe, yes, it was, with Tim Coyne, when I did Talking to Tim, which, by the way, I'll put in another plug here. That is a damn fucking good podcast. Talking to Tim between yours truly, the Scarborough Did, and Tim Coyne of the Hollywood Podcast. I really enjoy those. That's been a real highlight. Putting out a few of those. And it's on the Having Said That label. Yes. I do love being a podcaster. I do love having fun with this. I do love playing. And I was trying to think, like, for... Okay. Here it is. All right. I'm giving it to you. Remember in December? Do you remember in December? When... I said there was an opportunity to travel with the school to do something, and they needed project leads and guides and things. And I think I mentioned there was one even in Ghana, West Africa, for about 11 days. And I thought about it and thought, oh, I should apply. And I got all the documents, read about it, and then I just gave up. Just said, oh, fuck no, I'm going to be too busy. And then when I got my course load, I thought, no fucking way, you know. I can't be preparing for this, and I didn't have a good idea. Well, the other day, of course, the contest is closed, and the interview is supposedly over, except that the dean at my college approached me and said, Scarborough dude, except she used my other name, we need somebody mature, experienced, somebody who can connect with students to... for our programs that we do overseas, and a person with certain qualities and a degree of maturity. And, you know, it implied, I can't remember what exact words were, but like she's singled me out, came to find me to tell me this. Turns out they are interviewing a lot. I don't think they've found who they want yet. And so she said, would you please get in touch with the head of the program and talk to them about it? So I'm flattered. I'm knocked off my feet. Holy fuck. The dean, this thing that I decided not to do and never did apply, the dean has approached me and said, well, maybe you really should apply. And I'm tickled pink, but there's another part of me right away says, oh, fuck no, man. I just don't want it. I'm not ready for that. And, of course, the other voice that's rising up stronger than ever, what the fuck do you mean you're not ready for that? Apply anyway. If they don't accept you, no problem, big deal. You tried. But if you don't try and do this, if you don't apply... to be a project leader with some college students going overseas somewhere on a thing that's about global education and becoming a more responsible citizen. If you pass up that opportunity, you are an asshole. Your life is over. You're dead. Really, it comes down to that. So I have to apply. Whew, said it to you first. Holy fuck. And I'm really thinking about it. I'm thinking, you've got to come up with the right terms, and you've got to please a couple of people. It's probably going to be a panel, and you've got to... I'm not too worried about that, except it's how... I don't want to present myself with too much of a chip on my shoulder, which is how I'm feeling now. Like, I'm ready to say, hey, it's not whether or not, you know, I'm qualified for this job or that you're going to decide whether I'm suitable. It's whether this job you have suits me, you know. And I'm really feeling that cocky about it. And that could be a mistake. That could be a mistake. I also want to talk about podcasting. Like, hey, what are you doing, you know, to basically they're measuring, what's your commitment to making it a better world? You know, this is more or less what it's, what's down. And I, you know, to fall back on Nigeria, where I just went out and had fun, I have no claim to that, you know. My best claim is I spent 5 years volunteering with a local community center to help kids who are in trouble, keep them out of jail and prison, and help clean their record if they got one, or avoid getting one. So this is a good thing, which I'm thinking about getting back into. I'm feeling a little, I should be doing that again. So anyway, I think I have a lot to offer this college, and I think what I have to do is go and speak to the dean. Say, hey, you and I talk for a little bit here. And I almost feel, no, I gotta, there's this struggle about almost wanting to reveal the Scarborough dude. And in other parts, don't even do that. Why complicate things? Just go by who you are. You know, can the teacher, because I've always been trying to cover up. Like, I'm always a little bit paranoid that the wrong person could listen to the wrong part of the wrong Dixon Jane's podcast and really say, wow, this guy's not good. And it would be easy to take, I mean, I would fight it every inch of the way because it's so easy to take things out of context, as we all know. But it may be quite the reverse. I mean, this may be the feather in my cap, because this is about community empowerment. Podcasting, to me, is about empowerment and having a voice and raising it up against the commercial voices that are trying to drown us out with the pop stars, with fucking Sandra Bullock for Gravity, you know? This is what we do have to be pushing back at, and this kind of radio. So I could go in to the dean's office and say, look, I know about something called podcasting, which I don't think this college is even touching. Well, maybe you allow your journalism students to do it, but these students who are being left behind, these are the ones. So I sort of want to go into the dean's office and say, I want a special position. I want a little more freedom. I'm trust me that I'm going to do good things for your students. Let me combine my teaching of adults, my ESL, my work with the mentally handicapped over years, my years with people in trouble here in Scarborough, and my travel overseas, my experience living in different cultures. Let me combine all those things with, just on top of it, me being such a nice fucking guy, and from Scarborough itself, where this college is located, give me a free hand. Pay me a salary. Let me teach one of these courses. Let me do the credits and so on. But just don't leave me in this sort of temporary position. And for that, in return, yeah, sure, I'd be happy to be a guide on one of these trips or whatever is involved or needed. So there you have it. I'm sharing my private thoughts with you that now more than ever, I should either guard or release. But the one thing is, I just don't want my students finding me. That's all. And I say that because this is role-playing. I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't be such a bad thing, maybe. Those who, in fact, they wouldn't bother listening. They'd be bored. That's fine. Okay, I guess I'm going to stop there, and my hands are getting a bit cold. Yeah, it's almost time to head home. And see what comes next in the day. Get my shirts out of the dryer. That's be a good start. Coronation Street, 7:30. Bye for now. Arnold Lane had a strange hobby, collecting clothes, moonshine, washing lime. They suit him fine. On the wall hung a toy.
nasty sort of person. They gave him time, doors, bang, chain gang. He hated Owen Lane. It's not the same. Takes two to know. Two to know.
Chick. Sounds a little different in here. It's because I'm in the sitting down in the smallest room in the house. That's all I need say. I used to be really good at figuring out, just at almost knowing to the minute when to end my clips and then just slap them together and throw in the songs and bam, I got a 60-minute podcast on the nose. And lately I've been a little out of sync. Some clips have been longer, some have been shorter. And I'm not recalling when one started and when one ended and what I said and so on. So I've ended up for this particular podcast with two extra pieces that are already going to have to go into the next one because I don't want to make this too long. So I've got a 3-minute slot at the end, and that's what this is. This is fill for the 3-minute slot so that I can start the next one off fresh and not run this over time. Quick comment. All podcasters love to get feedback, comments. We just like to know that somebody's out there listening, but we don't fucking always feel like we need to reply to comments. It's a burden. You put your heart and soul into your podcast. I do anyway. I think a lot of others do. And that's enough. In that sense, it is a one-way street. Bam, I'm putting it out there. You make of it what you will. You listen, you don't listen, you reply, you don't reply, meet me in person, go out for a beer. All those things are great. But there is no obligation on the part of any podcaster to have to reply to each and every comment. I want to make that really loud and clear because that's just an added fucking burden. And if anybody out there feels that they're not getting enough out of this podcast, then stop fucking listening. At the end, it's easy. I don't need all of you out there. I'm very happy to have. I mean, very often I almost beg, get me some more listeners. But not if there's a cost to it. We don't get bread and butter for these podcasts. You know, we don't get paid for them. This is a work of sometimes passion, sometimes love, sometimes anger, frustration. But it is a creation. It is a thing we do. Well, in my case, on our own, of course, lots of couple casts. This is just my form of self-expression, and I don't take orders from anybody. Never have liked to. Maybe that's a lie. I'm holding down the job, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do to keep that job. But enough said. Enough said. It's I got stuff to do. I got a whole lot of stuff to do. Putting an end to this podcast is just one of them. So, see you next week. I'm already halfway there.